All right, Matt. So what did the ocean say to the lighthouse?
I don't know.
Nothing. It just waved. I warned you.
Man, you're right. If that was the best one,
Yep, I warned you. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales. All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
I'm still reeling after that stupid joke.
I know, it was bad. Well, here's the thing. I tried to pick a topical joke for once and do it because of our topic this week, and they were all bad. Like, bad. I spent way too long going through terrible jokes to find this one. And like I told you, it's going to be bad, but it's passable.
I'm amazed that you were able to find a list of that many jokes about our topic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's,
I mean, seriously, I mean, somebody had to not only think of those, they had to put them all together,
right,
and put them out for public consumption.
Right. Which shouldn't have been done, if I'm being honest.
Right.
The
I mean, what
list world? Of funny jokes would have been maybe two.
We should start asking ChatGPT to come up with a joke for the show. Yeah, about whatever topic it is.
That's a good idea. Yeah. I may try that next time, and we'll see what happens. I'll tell you prior to, or probably afterward, after the joke, if it's an AI-inspired joke. But
yeah.
So before we get into it, we want to say go check out the Podbelly Network at podbelly.com. We're happy to be associated with the shows on Podbelly Network. Go over there, check them out. You're going to find something that you're going to enjoy listening to, and you may never have found that show before. Also, while you're on the internet, go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. Sign up to become a patron. Our patrons are what are keeping us going right now, as far as being able to produce the quality show that we want to produce. Our patrons are an integral part of it. And if you sign up to become a $10 patron, you get not only the audio and video version of the bonus episode, but if we have ads, which are few and far between right now, if we have ads, you get an ad-free version of the show, plus you get our second show that we do, Side Quest, which is about no other topic that we talk about. It has nothing to do with Graveyard Tales. If you want to hear Matt and I in a different context, talking about dirty stuff, simply trying to make each other laugh and make you guys laugh, that is the show to check out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not for kids.
No, not family friendly like Graveyard Tales is, but freaking funny is what it is. But our $5 and $1 patrons, they also get a bonus episode weekly to listen to. So we have a huge catalog of Patreon bonus episodes that are out there that we've been doing for years now. So if you sign up now, you get the whole back catalog that you can go listen to. You could listen to me and Matt for months straight, get insanely tired of our voice, but
oh yeah,
you will have a ton of extra content to listen to. If you're going on a trip this summer, like currently I am on when you're hearing this, it's great. Sign up. You can get it into your podcast feed, all of those bonus episodes, and listen to them on your drive or your flight or whatever.
Yep, absolutely. It's a great time to do it. And we appreciate it so much, and it really helps, as Adam said. So
yep.
So check it out.
Patreon.com/graveyardtales. Okay, Matt. So that's all I got for housekeeping. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
So tonight, we're going to look at a haunted lighthouse And we've done this before, and we've brought up some other ones. But this one is supposedly very, very active. It's been investigated on television. It's got some pretty unique history. It's very old.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, whenever you talk about Florida, you know, Florida is just because of the history, because of the way that it was, you know, settled by Spain initially. You know, it's so unique. We get a lot of these stories. So yep. Tonight we're going to talk about the haunted lighthouse in Pensacola, Florida,
mm-hmm.
which mm-hmm. Which one of us has been to, I think.
Yes, yes.
Was it me?
It may have been me.
I have been by it, though.
Yeah.
When I was evacuating Hurricane, we drove through Pensacola.
Yep, yep.
And saw it then, but yeah.
Yeah, we like taking tours of like museums and different historic places when we go on vacation. And I've gotten to the point where I love lighthouses now. I don't know if it's like a midlife crisis or something, but I love lighthouses. And we were there last year, and Ashley's like, hey, do you want to, they've opened the tours back up, because they had closed the tours for a while. And because it's on the naval base there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So you have to go in through that, and they closed it during COVID restrictions and all that, but it was open. So we took the tour, and the thumbnail photos are some pictures that we took while we were actually there. So it's cool. Didn't take a haunted tour. We just took the historic tour, but that was fun enough. Climbed all the way to the top, Matt.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
In fact, I was reading, they don't allow flip flops.
No. No,
because you can't climb all those stupid stairs in flip flops. It's too dangerous.
Yep.
And so I read a TripAdvisor post from a lady that said she had to walk up it barefoot.
Yes. Yep.
Because they made her take her flip flops off. Mm-hmm.
They make you leave them down at the bottom of the stairs so that you don't put them on part of the way up. Because the lighthouse, as it goes up, the stairs are basically pizza slice shaped.
Yeah.
So toward the center, they're very narrow. When you got people coming up and down at the same time, you have to move to the side.
Uh-huh.
Okay. If you're going up, they make you move to the inside, which is the narrow side of the thing. I'm not good with heights.
Mm, yeah.
So you're sitting there on the narrow pizza slice looking down this tube.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, way, I mean, I forgot how 177 steps or more.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, 177.
And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. We had people in our group that went up that had to leave their flip-flops down because they're like, I'm at the beach. I'm wearing flip-flops. And then they said, no, you're going to trip and fall down the stairs. So
what is the line from Ghostbusters where they have to go to the top of the Empire State Building? And they're going up the steps, you know, and they're all, yeah. And then you see them and they're going, ugh, and they're dragging. And he's like, where are we? I don't know. Somewhere in the like 50s or something. He's like, all right, well, tell me when we get to 75,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
That's the way I'd be.
Yep. Yep.
Like, are we getting to 100 yet? Because I'm going to puke down this tube when we get there.
Yep. Like, actually, no, Matt, we're at 10.
10. That's yep. Right. 10. You can still see the floor.
Yeah, right. If you jump, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
That's right.
So, as we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. You can keep going if you want, because there's history in here that I'm not going to cover. We're going to touch on some important points, but I mean, it's been around forever. So there's history coming out the yang that we're just not going to be able to cover because it's minutia. So if you want to continue that, then go down to the bottom of our show notes, check the sources. Now, it's like I said, it's located in Pensacola, Florida. It's at 2081 Radford Boulevard in Pensacola, Florida. If you are down there and you want to go check it out, just know you are going to be entering a military base. And when you go in, the guard is going to stop you. And he's going to ask if you have any weapons or drugs in your vehicle. Don't look suspicious or you will get checked. Apparently, right. I didn't look suspicious enough because he let me go. You'd think if anybody got stopped, it'd be me. Like that redneck right there, he got something. Go get him.
Leave your weapons and drugs at home.
Yes. Yeah. Stick your drugs inside your weapon and leave it at the house. You know, that's right. Don't screw around with this. So let's look at Pensacola Bay real quick before we look at the lighthouse. Now, there have been five nations that have flown their flag over the Pensacola Bay. It's Spain, France, England, the Confederate States of America, and the United States. Now, they, because of this, it's given the rise of this nickname, the City of Five Flags. So that's like we have Six Flags over Texas because there were six flags to fly over Texas in its history. So the City of Five Flags is Pensacola. Pensacola is Florida's second oldest city, and it's got the deepest bay on the Gulf Coast, which kind of comes into play with shipwrecks and whatnot and why they needed a lighthouse and all that. But I didn't know that until doing this research that it's the deepest bay in the Gulf Coast. But makes sense why you can go on dolphin cruises and all this stuff in the bay.
Yeah.
Because it's deep. They come in. Now, it was first settled by Spaniards in 1559, like Matt was saying. And it's the oldest European settlement in mainland America. So the location south of the original British colonies and near the dividing line between French Louisiana and Spanish Florida is what caused Pensacola to change ownership several times. It was right there in that battleground area that, you know, one person took it, then another person took it, then a whole third party took it. So it's changed hands quite a few times. Pensacola was Spanish, then French, then Spanish, then British, then Spanish again. And then it became American, then Confederate, and then the current U.S. city that it is.
Yeah. So Spain really wanted it. They didn't want to give it up.
No, they'd
lose it. And then they were like, we want it back. We like it.
Yep.
They like the deepness of this bay.
Yeah. Right. Right. Love how deep this bay is. You've seen the size of the bay.
That was on the real estate. It was on the Zillow listing.
Yeah.
The deepest bay, you know, wait till you see the bay.
Yeah. You haven't seen a bay as deep as our bay. Come on, Spaniards, get our bay. Hop in our bay. See if you can fill. Okay, I'm going to stop. Now, early exploration of Pensacola Bay spanned decades. You had Ponce de Leon in 1513, Panfilo Navarez in 1528, and Hernando de Soto in 1539, all charting this area. Now, due to prior exploration, the first settlement of Pensacola was pretty large. It landed August 15th, 1559, and it was led by Don Tristan de Luna y Arellano, with, I think that, Arellano, A-R-E-L-L-A-N-O, Arellano.
You're asking me? You live in Texas.
That's a good point. I'll put it out in the ether. I think that's how you, but that settlement, they actually landed with over 1400 people on 11 ships that came from Veracruz, Mexico. That's a lot of people for the first settlement, Matt, 1400 people.
Oh yeah. I mean that, you know, they're crowding in
quickly. I mean, it's got a deep bay. Yeah. You knew where I was going to. That's going to be a running joke for this episode. The problem was, weeks later, The colony that was set up was decimated by a hurricane that hit on September 19th of 1559, and it killed hundreds of people. It sank five ships, it grounded another, and it ruined most of their supplies.
Yeah.
So out of that, the 1,000 survivors divided, and they relocated and resupplied the settlement, but because of famine and attacks, the effort was abandoned in 1561.
Yeah. They said, screw this bay.
Yeah. This bay is not deep enough for the likes of us. So about 240 people sailed to Santa Elena, which is today's Parris Island in South Carolina. But another storm hit there. So they then sailed onto Cuba and scattered. It makes you think that Mother Nature did not want that settlement taking hold anywhere. Because they got in Pensacola, whoop, hurricane. They moved up to the Parris Island in South Carolina, Santa Elena, whoop, hurricane. And they're like, okay, fine. We're going home.
Get it.
Yeah. We just wanted the deep bay. That's all it was. Now, the remaining 50 that were left at Pensacola, they were actually taken back to Mexico. And the viceroy's advisors concluded that Northwest Florida was too dangerous to settle. And so efforts to do so there ceased for another 135 years. You've ever been to Northwest Florida?
It's all
pretty dangerous. Yeah, it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I go, don't anybody ever go vacation in Northwest Florida.
That's right.
That's where we go. It's so dangerous. You should not go there. Y'all need to go somewhere else. Go to Alabama or something for your own safety. Not because I don't want people there, but just, you know, just for my own safety. Go somewhere else.
We need a wide berth.
Yeah, right. Now, soon after the United States took control of Florida from Spain in 1821, the federal government, they saw the importance of Pensacola's harbor because it's got a deep bay. So they moved to establish both a naval yard and a lighthouse there. So in March of 1823, Congress authorized $6,000 for the Pensacola lighthouse. Now it would be like $6 million.
Mm-hmm.
They'd say, $6,000. You can't do it for that. Let's give you $6 million. Now, it is crazy. I know the conversion rates were different back then because of, you know, inflation now and all that, but to think that they authorized $6,000 to build a lighthouse and everything that goes with it, and they were able to get it done.
Oh, yeah.
It's just crazy to me. Well, to serve the port until the lighthouse was finished, there was a floating light vessel called Aurora Borealis, and it was transferred from the mouth of the Mississippi. It had been there at Franks Island, before the Franks Island Lighthouse was completed. Well, since they completed it, they just said, well, let's move Aurora Borealis out here to Pensacola Bay.
Franks Island Lighthouse sounds like somewhere I'd like to eat. Maybe
it does,
have a beer.
They'd have great blue
t-shirt.
Crab claws.
I got lit at Franks.
There you go. I like that. Franks, if you're not doing that, Matt needs some compensation for that slogan.
That's right.
I got lit at Frank's Lighthouse. Send the check to Matt Rudolph. So there was a site just west of Fort Barrancas that was selected for the lighthouse. Now ships would be able to steer directly toward the light to enter the harbor, you know, safely and avoid the rocks and all that, which is not something that was possible with that Aurora Borealis. So they said, we can't just have a light ship. We do need the lighthouse. It'll help sailors out tremendously. Now, on March 24th, 1824, Winslow Lewis, he responded to this advertisement that was put out in the Boston Patriot, and he offered to build the lighthouse and the dwelling there for $4,927. Now, for an additional cost of $750, Lewis would, you know, fit up the lighthouse and the light with 10 patent lamps and 10 14-inch reflectors, And for the extra money, he would also include a bunch of other things to light and run the lighthouse, you know, oil, things to store the oil, all that stuff. So that was actually a lot better deal than the 6,000 that they were doing. You know, it was close, but they came out under budget, basically.
Yeah.
So Lewis's offer was accepted by a man named Stephen Pleasanton. He was the fifth auditor of the treasury, and they approved it on April 2nd of 1824. Now, the new tower was first lit on December 20th, 1824, by a bachelor named Jeremiah Ingram. To produce a flashing signature, two groups of five lamps were fastened to opposite ends of a framework, which was then rotated by a clockwork system. So after 2 years at the post, Ingram married Michaela Pennelbear.
Yeah.
He married her. She was from Pensacola. And together they managed the lighthouse, and they raised three children at the lighthouse station, which is just amazing to me that you're raising your children at a lighthouse.
Oh,
those
yeah.
kids had to have had a cool life. I mean,
yeah,
I know. Why it not? Was work, but
running up and down them steps.
Yeah, man. Falling, getting back up.
Yeah.
You know, get to 160th step and
That's right. Yeah.
They're kids. Trying
to slide down on a mm-hmm. cardboard box.
They're rubber. Kids bounce. They'll come do. Back.
Yeah.
Now, when Jeremiah passed away in 1840, Michaela took over responsibility of the lighthouse. In the late 1840s, the clockwork mechanism failed, and they hired two guys to rotate the lamps by hand until repairs were made. So it was being done by this clockwork system. It failed, and they said, hey, Jim, Earl, get up there, walk around. Just turn,
that's right.
turn
walk
this
around
stupid
in a
thing.
Circle.
Yeah, like horses in a pony yeah. ride.
I'd be like, this job sucks. This job sucks. Yeah. When's lunch? Never. Yeah. This job. Yeah, they eat a sandwich and somebody's a shipwreck, you yeah. know?
Well, they walk around so much, they're on their break, they're still spinning. They're dizzy. And they,
around one another.
And yeah. It's
like,
rotating like planetary bodies here. They probably didn't walk around. They may have turned it by. I don't know. I didn't.
Either way, it sucked.
Yeah. Either way,
I don't want to do this any more than I want to walk around in a circle forever.
Right. Exactly.
Waiting on somebody to fix this clock.
Yeah. And you know, if they had phones, they'd have been calling. They get out here and fix this stupid thing. Come on. Come on.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
We won't be able to get
send
out there.
Send a telegraph. Yeah. You know,
till Thursday of next month between 8 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Waiting on the cable guy.
Yeah, please be there. If you're not there, we'll have to reschedule. I was in the bathroom. I was here. I was peeing. I couldn't.
Although I must say that the idea to use a clockwork mechanism in the early 1800s mm-hmm. to make that thing rotate is pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, they didn't have, you know, little battery engines that would spin something around,
right?
You know, so that idea was pretty intelligent.
Yeah,
you know, until it failed.
Until it wasn't. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you got to think. It's like, you know, this thing goes nonstop constantly, sure. and it's not just moving clock hands. You know, it's moving, you know, this big rig that's got these lights attached to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and just the way they set it up with reflectors and lamps to get it to flash. I don't know that I could figure that out.
Oh, yeah. No, I, you know, yeah. I'd have been the idiot up there spinning around.
Yeah, exactly. Around, it'd be me know? And you on opposite sides of this thing talking trash to each other as we're
walking.
Man,
I wish there was a way we could make this do it by itself, and then we could sit down and play cards or something.
Right, right. you want a beer? I would love a beer. Let's figure out how to make this do it on its own. Well, Michaela, Jeremiah's wife, she actually served until her own death in 1855. So she took over as the lighthouse keeper. And then her son-in-law, Joseph Palms, was hired as the keeper. So they kept it in the family for many years. Mm-hmm. Now, by 1850, there were regular complaints that were starting to be voiced regarding the lighthouse. Apparently, trees on Santa Rosa Island were blocking the light, and the light was considered too dim. So in 1852, the newly established Lighthouse Board recommended that a, quote, first-class seacoast light with a height no less than 150 feet be built at Pensacola. So Congress then allocated $25,000 for the lighthouse in 1854. Can you imagine that? They went from $6,000 to $25,000 in a matter of a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yep.
So,
and it was in a different place.
Right. Not far, but just a little bit. And there was an additional $30,000 put into it in 1856. So there was a site selected that was a half a mile west of the original lighthouse. And work on the tower was supervised by John Newton of the Army Corps of Engineers. They completed construction on the new lighthouse in 1858, and the lamp in the tower's first order was a Fresnel lens that was first lit on New Year's Day in 1859 by Keeper Palms. So a Fresnel lens is a big deal. I think we talked about it with the St. Augustine Lighthouse.
We did. Yeah.
So go back, check out that if you want to hear more about the Fresnel lens. And they have one on display at Pensacola Lighthouse if you want to see one in person. We got to see one there, so that's pretty cool. Now, the tower stood 159 feet tall, and it was painted white. The base of the tower had a diameter of 30 feet, and it tapered up to a diameter of 15 feet at the top. In 1861, Florida seceded from the United States during the Civil War. So to make the story a little shorter, Union forces abandoned the nearby Fort Barrancas, and Confederates took over the lighthouse. So on November 22, 1861, an artillery battle erupted between these two factions, and it lasted for 2 days. Well, the lighthouse was struck, they say, probably half a dozen times with artillery fire. It didn't fall, but if you can imagine, you know, cannonballs hitting the lighthouse and all that, that's what it went through. Now, in 1874, lightning struck the lighthouse, and then it struck it again the following year. So, lightning does strike twice. It was found after this that the lightning rod that it had been equipped with was faulty, because the lightning strike actually melted metal fixtures in the lighthouse.
How do you have a faulty lightning rod?
I guess it's not grounded properly. Some dude, Earl, that was spinning the thing.
He just stuck a metal pole up on top of it.
Uh-huh.
It didn't go all the way to the ground.
Yeah, it didn't ground out.
It was just like a lightning attractor.
Yes, yeah. It was actually a lightning rod in the sense of, lightning's going to strike here. It's 159 feet plus a lightning rod on it.
That's right. That's right. Don't be standing up top when it hits.
No, no.
Or you'll be picking up radio stations in your teeth.
Right. Like Lucille Ball. You heard that story?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. If you hadn't heard that story, I'm not going to get into it, but go look up Lucille Ball gets radio stations in her fillings.
Yeah.
You'll be interested. So apparently nature decided it didn't like this lighthouse, and it took another hit at the lighthouse on August 31st of 1886 when a rare earthquake shook the tower. How many earthquakes have you heard of in Florida? Not many. No, it happens, but it's rare. There was a keeper who penned the following report on the earthquake. Quote, it lasted between 3 and 4 minutes and was accompanied by a rumbling as if people were ascending the steps, making as much noise as possible. This shock was like a tremor, causing the lens to vibrate from side to side. The pendulum clock on the lower floor was stopped by the shock at 9:07 p.m., end quote. Now, in that period between the lightning strikes and the earthquake, they actually found cracks in the tower. And they thought that these cracks were probably from the artillery rounds that it took during the Civil War. That's a good thought.
Yeah, but it just went through an earthquake.
Yeah, but they thought that this was actually found before the earthquake. And then the earthquake hit.
Okay.
And so then
that made it worse.
Yeah, it was, it made the cracks worse. And then it was hit by hurricanes after that and made the cracks even worse. So they had to fix many years of damage from natural disasters and Union and Confederate artillery fire. Now, from 1863 to 1886, there were only 11 different keepers to serve at the Pensacola Lighthouse, of whom 9 are removed from duty for offenses ranging from intoxication to neglect. So there was only 2 that didn't get removed from duty.
Well, you know, there's not a whole lot to do.
This is true. Know,
especially if the light is somewhat automated. Right. You know, you just got to make sure it's lit.
Yeah, that it keeps being automated. And
right, you know. So you sit around and, you know, you start having, a few drinks because you're bored. And then next thing you know, you're passed out drunk.
Yeah.
And the light goes out.
Coast Guard inspects and, well, he's passed out on step 102. It's his favorite step.
Get this guy out of here.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 1939, the U.S. Coast Guard took over the duties that were formerly performed by the Bureau of Lighthouses. Now, Bureau personnel, they're given the choice. You can either go into the Coast Guard through a military position or remain a civilian employee. Now, in Pensacola, head keeper Louis Borras elected to join the Coast Guard, but his assistant, James Hatton, and Mr. Wright actually remained civil service, which is interesting that they had the choice.
I know.
It's taken over by the Coast Guard, but you don't have to join the Coast Guard. You can stay a civilian. And one guy said, no, I'll join. I bet the pay was better if you were in Coast Guard.
Surely.
Had to be.
But you had to go through training. You know?
True. Now,
and these other lazy drunks, they were like, no.
Yeah, no. That's true.
Can we keep our job? Okay.
We'll Now, in October that year, electricity was installed in the Lens Room and the keeper's quarters. And the quarters were also equipped with indoor plumbing. So up until that point, outhouse.
Oh, they just pee right off the top.
True.
Yeah.
True. Some guy down.
You?
Yeah. Some guy down below is like, oh, the sea spray. Getting the sea spray, warm sea spray all over his face. Now, the Coast Guard closed the lighthouse to the public in January 2007. But by May of 2008, they were back to conducting public tours. Then in September of 2009, Ghost Hunters, the TAPS crew, conducted an investigation at the lighthouse. And then they closed it again in 2020 for COVID. And then they opened it and we toured it in 2023.
Yep. And it's haunted. Good night, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show.
There you go. Tharby Ghost. Now we're done.
That's right. Oh, man. So, yeah, well, like I said at the top of the show, it is fairly active. And depending on who you ask, there could be quite a few spirits that have decided to make the Pensacola Lighthouse their afterlife home.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly enough, there is more to the story of Jeremiah Ingram and his wife, Michaela, who were the first keepers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, as Adam said, in August of 1826, you know, Jeremiah Ingram and his new bride, Michaela, moved into the lighthouse. And they took care of the lighthouse together. And while they were there, Michaela actually grew to love the lighthouse. She really enjoyed being a keeper's wife and wanted to learn everything she could about the job of being a proper lighthouse keeper's wife, which I guess there are, you know, you got to make sure that he's, you know, not drunk, and he's getting right. up there and checking on the light. You know, it's, right. you know, got a little checks and balances there. So, but she was very eager to help Jeremiah with the cleaning of the lenses and the maintenance of the tower. She stood by her husband every day, absorbing what he did in tending the most important equipment, which is the light.
Mm-hmm.
The oil used to power the light made the lenses dirty and smoky. So she would polish and shine them to absolute perfection. Michaela also kept the tower itself white glove clean, they said. Everyone admired her, and she was thought of as a truly good wife. However, when one looks back, there were certain aspects of Jeremiah and Michaela's marriage that kind of jump out at you. When looking at it, it seems that she may have cared a little too much for the lighthouse, even to the extent that she preferred the lighthouse over her husband in terms of affection.
Hmm.
So she was really in love with the lighthouse?
Yeah. Why don't you go marry it then?
Yeah,
she right. might have. Well,
she might have. Now, Michaela would often pressure Jeremiah into being cleaner, and when it came to the maintenance of the light, the couple disagreed with many of the procedures Michaela wanted to change because they were more to her liking. However, Jeremiah was the keeper, and she was his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the final decision on how things were actually done. Now, reports say that no one saw the couple together very much. Jeremiah would come to town for supplies, but he was usually alone. Then in 1840, Jeremiah died. No one knew exactly when or how this happened.
Mm-hmm.
Some believe he just got sick and died. But there were some who believe that he passed away in a more sinister manner. They thought that Michaela had murdered him.
Mm.
You know, they were alone in the tower most of the time. Jeremiah had mentioned some very strong arguments about the tower. And after investigating, it was believed that Michaela became enraged with her husband during one of their frequent arguments, grabbed a large butcher knife, and pushed the blade deep into Jeremiah's chest.
Mm.
As a consequence of this action, a large blood stain was left on the pine floor of the room, of the keeper's quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a blood trail was seen going into several of the other rooms. But still, this is just a theory.
Yep. Hearsay.
But the fact that Michaela took over as keeper after Jeremiah's death, and was the keeper until 1855. Michaela said it was an intruder that killed Jeremiah, that she was frightened and hid because she thought that Jeremiah would be able to handle the situation.
Mm, likely so, story.
Ooh, yeah, little mystery, you know. You know, this lady falls in love with a lighthouse, you know, takes out her husband. You know,
marry the lighthouse.
We've heard this story 1,000 times. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen 3 true crime stories about it just last week.
Yep, that's right. You know, it's hey, lighthouse love, it's a big thing.
It is.
But not everybody believes that story. They don't all believe that an actual murder happened. You know, Jeremiah died of natural causes. Michaela took over. You know, and for the next 15 years, she was the keeper. That was it. But people say that there is a decidedly unhappy presence in the tower.
Hmm.
And stories of the ghosts of the Pensacola Lighthouse talk about objects of being thrown at guests, especially ones that stay in the keeper's quarters. And one workman even described having a water hose yanked from his grip.
Oh, wow.
Now, you know, all of that, you know, it could be, well, you know, this would be a cool haunted lighthouse, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why would there be any ghosts here? I don't know. Maybe old Michaela, she killed Jeremiah because she was in love with a lighthouse. Sounds like a great story. Nobody really knows. Now, in modern times, when the lighthouse was being redone, the many layers of tile were removed down to the original wooden floors. And a large stain that looked like blood was discovered in one room. And so was the blood trail.
Interesting.
Funny thing is no amount of scrubbing would remove the stain. And when tested, it was indeed blood. Wow. So for those who had kind of always wondered if Michaela Ingram murdered her husband, they thought this was evidence enough that is what happened.
Yep.
Now, new keepers and their families were coming in to live at the lighthouse right up until the light was automated in 1965. Most of them were glad to leave because they never felt that they were really alone. There always seemed to be some unseen presence. They would report hearing footsteps on the tower stairs when they were supposedly alone in the building. They would hear voices calling to them, apparently from nowhere, and at times, they said the walls actually seemed to be speaking to them.
Wow.
Now, laughter was also a very common occurrence, and the origin of the laughter, that they said it was so loud that it shook the windows.
What?
Yeah.
It's not normal laughter.
No, that's right. I tell you what, they didn't tell them one of them damn lighthouse jokes that you.
That's the truth.
That would not have made them laugh that hard, but it made the lighthouse more of a mystery. They said doors would slam on their own. The smell of pipe tobacco would kind of waft through the air upstairs when no one was smoking. Footsteps have been heard ascending the staircase, and there has been a glowing ghost-like form that has been spotted in the top window. Now, other people point to the fact that at Pensacola Lighthouse, there's no need for air conditioning, even on the most hot days. The air in the lighthouse stays at a very cool, almost bone-chilling temperature. Which is odd.
Yep. For you Florida, know, it's
odd. I've been to Pensacola many times. It's hot if you go at the right time of year.
Sure is.
But visitors say they feel a cold, invisible force moving through the tower, inching its way through the cracks and sliding up them as they make their way up the winding steps to the tower. Did you feel a cold breeze creeping up your leg going up the tower, Adam?
I was going to say, I didn't notice a cold breeze. I did notice that it wasn't as hot in there. I just assumed there was air conditioning.
Yeah.
But it was cooler in there than outside. But it wasn't like, this is a obvious cold spot that I'm walking in and out of.
It sounds like the entire tower is a cold spot. One giant cold spot.
I was a little distracted with not wanting to fall.
Right.
But, you know, me and my height thing. I was so worried
hot,
about,
cold, I'm too high.
Yeah, you know? I almost thought about walking up the stairs like a dog, hands and feet.
Oh, yeah.
Just to keep. Yeah. So I had 4 points of contact at all.
Yeah, you know. Exactly. I would imagine just by looking at pictures of it that you could do that.
Yeah.
Pretty easily. You know, I mean,
I jokingly did it for a step or two. It wasn't that hard.
It's pretty steep.
It is.
Now, Emmett Hatton, who Adam mentioned before, he was a child when he lived with his parents in the lighthouse while his father was the keeper in the 1930s and 40s. Now, Emmett says that he often heard the sound of human breathing in the lantern room. Human breathing. Well, I guess, that you could tell the difference as opposed to an animal breathing on you as opposed to a human breathing.
Not a dog panting.
Yeah. He said it definitely wasn't the wind, and Hatton also occasionally would hear footsteps on the stairs leading to the lantern room. He would call out to whoever it was, but no answer ever came. So Emmett always kind of thought as a child that it was a ghost, that there was a ghost living there. Now, ghost hunter Mickey Mashburn says that the most popular ghost in the lighthouse is Samuel, who can be found in the tower. Mashburn says after Samuel passed away, he was buried in Georgia, but his spirit decided to return to the lighthouse. Samuel tends to appear in a window high up in the tower, and it's also been reported that Samuel is a little bit of a ladies' man, and that he often touches female visitors. And some female guests have said they have felt something touch them on the butt while they're climbing the steps to the top. What they didn't tell them is that Adam was right behind them.
Right. It was during mine. Grabby grab.
Yeah.
As they walk up.
That's right. I mean, you know, we've already told you it's a pretty steep staircase. I mean, when you're going up and someone's in front of you, your face is in their butt.
I needed something to grab. I was falling.
Yeah. I fell. Oh, I fell again.
Ashley and I, if we're going up the stairs here at the house together, she either makes me go first or will run up in front of me because she knows what's coming.
That's
if
right.
She's in front of me. I'm like,
we don't have stairs. You know, our home is a ranch style home.
Mm-hmm.
And, but anytime Amanda gets on a ladder, she gets up on the step ladder. She knows what's happening.
Oh yeah.
You know,
oh, yeah.
She'll be standing there just like, okay, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Just
you know,
do it. Get
don't
it
let me
way.
Fall.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's our duty as husbands to
That's
do
That's exactly right.
If we didn't do it, there would be something wrong and they would know that we were angry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
But when all is fine, expect. You walk past me, it grabbed or smacked. One of the two.
Yeah, it's going to happen. And if you lift it up that high, then we have no choice.
And I'll tell you, she gets her revenge. I get smacked too as I walk by. I'm not paying attention, and then I'm sore for like 10 minutes going, wow,
man.
Hurt.
I don't think I ever, Amanda doesn't ever get me that hard.
She's a mama. She's had to spank. She knows.
Oh, and, okay.
You know.
Hey, you probably like it, weirdo.
Well, I didn't want to say it. But.
Now, paranormal investigators have said that they have communicated with two children, Lizzie and Joey, who died from yellow fever in 1922.
Jeez.
Now, it's said that the spirits of these kids wander all over the lighthouse property and will actually travel through visitors, which can be a pretty frightening experience.
Oh, I can only imagine.
And Rob Booth, who is the night tour manager, he said, people will stand in the doorways downstairs and the kids will run through the house and run through them. And we watch people get the willies and we kind of laugh because we know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you're like, whoa, you know, you got to do that. So now every time I get that weird chill, you know, I'm going to think, man, those damn kid ghosts just ran right through me.
Yep. Yep. Thanks. Yep.
That's exactly right. Yep. That's like, put that right there at Adam's head.
Mm-hmm. That'll be great.
Now, Lizzie in particular is often found in one of the bedrooms of the keeper's house where she reportedly likes to play. Now, investigators say that they routinely communicate her in what has been termed the bloody bedroom. It was in this bedroom that one Ellen Mueller died from complications during childbirth.
Mm.
Ellen grew up in the lighthouse and eventually had her wedding there. But in 1911, she died from blood loss after giving birth. Now,
jeez.
That, you know, that is a, from all I can tell, a factual story, but there are still some inconsistencies with it. Okay. So the birth was actually in 1905, as opposed to 1911, depending on which story you look at. And Ellen is often called Ella, you know, as that was her nickname. And it also says that she lived for another 5 months after giving birth before succumbing to her medical issues.
Hmm.
So you don't really know. But either way, most investigators believe that an event like that is a significant cause for a haunting.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about a lot of old houses that somebody died during childbirth, and there's, you know, paranormal activity going on, you know, in that same room or area where it happened. Now, other spirits include Thomas, who resides in the basement, and Raymond, who lives under the stairs, or, you know, has his afterlife under the stairs. And, you know, I hunted and hunted and hunted, even by name, for these two. I couldn't find any stories related to Thomas or Raymond other than they just mentioned that they're there.
That's so weird.
I don't know where they necessarily come up with the names. Some of the stories I read indicate that they have had communication with these spirits. Mm. To where they get the names like Lizzie, right, and Joey and Raymond, you know, that these spirits have expressed that is their name. Of course, you know, there's records of the people that have been there. I'm sure there's records of the children that grew up there that were the children of the current keeper. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. It seems kind of strange. I've not ever seen a place that has this many spirits that are named that aren't just a nickname. You know, we call him Sam or we call him Charlie or whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of them that are like, this spirit is named this because they told us that. You don't hear that a lot.
No, you don't, because that's not something that comes through.
Right.
Most of the time when people are doing spirit box or anything like that, names don't often come through. So,
not that many.
No.
I mean, you may get one.
It's interesting.
Yeah. You might get one, but, you know, you don't get all of them.
Right, right.
So
let's do a roll call.
That's right. Here's, who's here? You know.
Well, there's Bill, there's Ellen, there's Jeremy, there's the dude who lives under the stairs.
Right, yeah.
We call him Harry.
Yeah. There's the guy that grabs women's butts. You know, mm-hmm. There's that.
Call him Matt. No reason for that. We just do
it. Yeah.
I knew what was coming. I had to get my shot in first.
Now, they said no one knows for sure how many or who the ghosts are.
Sure.
Some think it's Michaela, who could not leave her beloved lighthouse. Others say it's Jeremiah, who would not surrender the light to his wife. But night tour coordinator Rob Boo says, we don't really say that we're haunted. We say that we're occupied by six people who really like it here and choose to stay with us. You know, six. What? He says six.
Why do they think that's better?
I don't know. But, you know, the tour guides will tell you there's six of them there. But, you know, nobody knows for sure.
Yeah, it's not like they got a clock in, clock out sheet that they fill out.
You know, so I agree with the fact that there were some things that could have happened or that did happen in the lighthouse, around the lighthouse, that would promote a negative energy enough to hold on to a spirit and to provide a residual haunting. They don't sound like just typical residual hauntings. I mean, these sound intelligent if they're communicating back and forth and grabbing butts and stuff like that. Which again would kind of seem out of sorts to have that many intelligent hauntings going on at one time in a relatively small place.
Yeah, it's not huge.
I mean, we're not talking about like a haunted prison here that's, you know, acres and acres. I mean, we're talking about a single lighthouse that was built in the 1800s.
With like a keeper's house on the side.
Right.
But that's not huge.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a castle. It's not a mansion. No, it's small. You know, have that many spirits just hanging around. It's kind of crowded.
Mm-hmm.
But there is another theory as to why the Pensacola Lighthouse would be haunted.
Okay.
Some believe that regardless of any of the events historically, the lighthouse would have been haunted anyway, even without a murder. Because using astronomy charts, the Pensacola Lighthouse is situated in a vortex or a doorway, which is a link between the world of our daily life and another place where lighthouse keepers from all over who have lost their lives during storms now reside. So this is like the afterlife lighthouse for all of the lighthouse keepers, yep, spirits that died doing their job.
Lighthouse keeper spirit retirement home.
Yeah, exactly. This is where you go. Okay.
I was on board with, that's plausible until you said of all lighthouse
keepers. I know it.
And then I don't know if y'all noticed my face, but it completely changed.
That's
at that
right.
point.
I was watching, waiting.
I was like, what? I'm going, okay. We've heard of vortexes and areas that people congregate. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Lighthouse keepers. Only lighthouse keepers.
You got to have a membership card and everything, mm-hmm, a death certificate, what lighthouse you worked at, when you died. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, okay, you're good. You can come in.
Okay. Like having a government ID and stuff. Can't work for the government unless you fill out all this paperwork. So can't get into the lighthouse retirement home until.
But because they feel like this vortex is here, they say that the lighthouse is akin to the Bermuda Triangle, that these ghosts come through the doorway and they gather here to socialize. So it is literally the retirement club. It's like the VFW of life, mm-hmm, lighthouse keepers. Mm-hmm. Okay. They have little gatherings there, parties, once a month, everybody comes and they tell stories about, yep, what it's like to grow up in a lighthouse.
Where everybody knows your name.
Oh, so that was, when I found that, I was like, really? Okay.
That sucked me in.
It's a theory.
It's definitely a theory. What kind of, I don't know, but.
Yeah. Now, I mean, honestly, if I was going to buy into some of it, I would say if Jeremiah was murdered in that lighthouse, if they found evidence of this blood stain, years later. Maybe. I mean, that would definitely bring about, some weird energy. I also think that when we've talked about this with other lighthouses, we've discussed, a lot of these keepers are there by themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jeremiah and Michaela being a husband and wife team, they were unique. But there were a lot of them that were just there, it was one guy. He was there all the time by himself, yep, unless somebody came and checked on him or they got relief every so often so that they could, go get supplies or something like that, yep, and being alone like that, especially right there on the coast, how many weird things do people experience at night on the coast? True. The sea breeze blowing in, the sound of the waves, sailors tell stories like this all the time.
Especially if you're drinking.
Yeah. I mean, you hear all these, there's weird spirits out on the water because of the past shipwrecks and, mm-hmm, and naval battles and everything. And, all the Davy Jones locker kind of stories and stuff like that. And yep, you hear this, it's full of stories, mermaids and sea monsters and all kinds of stuff. And even the last lighthouse that we mentioned had a story of a sea monster.
Yeah. Yep.
We were talking about Prince Edward Island. So I think that a lot of what makes these lighthouses unique are the stories from the people that lived there and were there for long periods of time by themselves. And yep, they either think these things are happening to them. They don't have anybody else to tell them that they didn't hear the walls laughing at them. There's nobody else going, I didn't see anything. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. There's nobody to, dissuade them from that line of thinking. And then it just builds. And then the next thing you know, they're telling somebody else, you know, this place is, you know, at night, this place gets kind of crazy. And then you've got another keeper that hears these stories or reads stories that are left by the previous keeper. And then they start feeling this stuff. And they start seeing these things and hearing this laughter and the voices and everything. And it just compounds on itself until eventually the stories get out and the community begins to think, man, that lighthouse is haunted. You know, there's something there. Now, I'm not saying there's not. But, you know, there's a lot of lighthouses that have ghost stories associated with them.
Yeah. And one of the other theories that I heard was all of the shipwrecks that happened out there in the bay would bring, you know, the ghost still looking for this lighthouse, and they would end up at the lighthouse, whether they moved on afterward or not. But it would cause them to, you know, keep showing up at the lighthouse.
Yeah.
I think it's all the lighthouse keepers after they die coming to Pensacola for vacation to see the deep bay.
That's right. That they got.
I think that's what it is.
We got one more in. What do you One more deep bay joke. All right. But, you know, what do you guys think? I know we've got listeners in and around the Pensacola area. Mm-hmm. I know that we've got listeners that have been and maybe even have taken this tour. You know, Adam's taking the tour. So maybe you've heard some of these stories. You know, you've heard that, you know, there's multiple ghosts that haunt the Pensacola Lighthouse. Let us know. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. Go to Facebook, search The Graveyard. You'll find it. Thousands of members in there sharing personal experiences, you know, jokes, you know, asking for help, whatever. No one's going to make fun of you. No one's going to call you a whack job. Everybody just wants to hear these really great stories. So it's a safe place to come and read and share those things. And after you're doing that, you can go over to our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can listen to the show. You can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. And you can become a patron. And as Adam mentioned at the top of the show, we really appreciate the support we're getting from our patrons right now. It's really helping us keep the show going.
Yep.
So, I don't know. That's all I've got, man. This is a pretty cool place. I hope I gave you some things to stick in the back of your head when you take your trip down there.
Yeah. I'll be worried about getting walked through.
Yeah. That's right. By a child ghost.
Yeah.
That's great. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.